Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello and welcome back to the New Books in Indian Religions podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Raj Balkaran. And apropos the new broader brand of the podcast, we have a publication today in the wonderful world of Sikhism. I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Michael Philip Bruner, who is a visiting researcher at Tufts University on his brand new publication, Education and Modernity in Colonial Punjab, Khalsa College, the Sikh Tradition, and Webs of Knowledge. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, hi, Raj. Thanks for having me.
So tell us what your book is about. What is this Khalsa College?
As the title says, at the core, it's a history of this institution in Amritsar in northwestern India. As you said, it's 1880 to 1947, so it's about the colonial history of this institution that still exists until today. And what I try to analyze in this book is kind of a form of Sikh modernity that was developed at this institution. And I try to consider a lot of local, regional, national, imperial, and also global dynamics that impacted this process.
So what sort of data were you looking at for this publication?
Yeah, that was quite a lot of archival material. Of course, sources from the college itself, like the obvious report and college magazine, and a lot of other institutional sources, like organizations that were kind of backing this institution, like the Chief Khalsa Divan. So I was looking at these organizational sources like reports, minutes, stuff like that. But as well, a lot of state, or meaning government records, because this institution was, at least until the 1920s, quite impacted by the British government, which had kind of a tight grasp at the institution. So yeah, there's a lot of government sources also, which were very helpful. And then, of course, the like material to get a grasp of the broader like public reception of the institution, like newspapers, both in English mainly and Punjabi as well. Well, it's structured in four main chapters, which are all quite long, and which each deal with kind of one topic, or more like a complex of topics. So in the first chapter, I kind of traditionally tell the chronological history of this institution, but with a view on kind of social or social religious developments in Punjab and among the Sikh community at that time, during this kind of 60-70 years that I cover. So yeah, the first chapter covers a lot of politics in Punjab, social developments, and of course, as I said, the particular institution of this college itself. Then in the next three chapters, I talk more about some specific topics which I found were quite prominent at this institution. I mean, chapter two, it's religion, obviously, meaning Sikhism. And first I kind of look at how these new or modern forms of reformist or neo-Sikhism or whatever you'd like to call it were translated at this institution and institutionalized. The big impact that scholars at the institution had in developing translations and stuff like that. But they also try in the second half of the chapter to look how the college and the involved scholars and professors and activists kind of tried to frame or develop their Sikhism in a very kind of global framework, which allowed them to participate in global networks and postulate their own kind of place in this modern world. So that's the second part of this chapter. Then the next chapter talks about agriculture, which was again a very prominent topic at the institution. As I said, at least until the 1920s, the British Indian or the Punjab government had quite a lot of influence in the institution. So in the maybe first 3 years of the 30 years of the institution, it was kind of a pioneering small little example of a kind of Punjabi paternalist agriculture discourses or rural reconstruction discourses. Then afterwards, after the British withdrew from the institution, or rather were kind of thrown out, they the college kept to this kind of agricultural focus, but again, it's quite interesting, they developed it in ways that they were looking more at other kind of nationalist enterprises in this regard, like schemes from by Tagore or Gandhi and stuff like that, but at the same time also looked more at global discourses of so-called rural reconstruction, and which I found very interesting. They kind of looked at the USA, which at that point were like the epitome of modern scientific agriculture, and sent a lot of teachers and scholars to the US and had some corporations and stuff like that. So towards the end of the chapter, there is actually like small links to later Cold War kind of US development aid, cooperation, stuff like that. So that I found really interesting. Then in the last of the large main chapters, I talk about kind of military schemes and physical education schemes at the college, which were another kind of focus at the institution. And here again, you had kind of, these kind of interesting dynamic processes that the college had to, referred at once or at the same time to kind of imperial debates and narratives about the Sikhs, about gender and the Indian body and topics like that. But they also tried to kind of modernize their kind of traditional sporting schemes and stuff like that by participating or drawing from kind of global knowledge exchanges, especially in the realm of physical culture. So these are the main chapters, and of course there's an introduction and conclusion.
Could you say a bit more about what you talk about in chapter 3 with modern Sikhism, these initiatives? Can you talk about that? How did they attempt to modernize Sikhism?
The book that is not so much a kind of work interested in like Sikh theology or what might have been developed as that during this period. So it doesn't go that much into that, but it shows how this kind of Khalsa-oriented, like homogenized versions of Sikhism were kind of institutionalized through or at this institution through like regular rituals and teachings for its students, but as I said, also through the publication of translations, of annotated commentaries and stuff like that of the scriptures in Sikhism. Yeah.
Could you tell us a bit about your background and how you ended up studying this school?
Yeah, I mean, it's of course a very specific topic, so yeah.
It's niche, to be sure.
Yeah. And might sound like there would be some kind of very specific connection or personal connection, but in the end, it was more a result of a kind of developing intellectual curiosity. But there is, if we go back, like at the very start, there is some, or it rooted in some kind of coincidence, because at one of my first classes when I was a history student, I had a class on like religion and politics in colonial South Asia, and I was very randomly assigned to do a presentation on the Sikh community, and this kind of stick to me. Then, of course, I learned more about colonialism, about South Asian history and stuff like that. But this kind of interest in history of Punjab and history of the Sikhs kind of remained. I then got more interested in especially history of education in colonial South Asia. And when I was kind of looking into education among the Sikhs, I came more and more across this college, which I found really interesting because, as I maybe already kind of implied, there were a lot of dynamics and processes which kind of converged at this institution. Like, collaboration with the whole imperial project, anti-imperial resistance, and as I said, these dynamics of renegotiating Sikh religion, and of course you also had these kind of fascinating knowledge exchanges and education networks and stuff like that. So I was kind of surprised that there never had been like a long scholarly analysis of this institution, while of course you had already in the 80s like studies on Muslim institutions especially, and then after the 2000s or in the 2000s more like newer studies on institutions like Banaras Hindu University and stuff like that. But Khalsa College was never really covered. So when it was my time to get to my PhD thesis, really thought that would be a great topic.
It's a fascinating project, insight into this college and its situation historically and geographically and culturally. Say something about what you talk about in chapter 5 in terms of disciplining the quote-unquote martial Sikh of the school.
I mean, maybe I have to talk a little bit about kind of the background of the college in terms of who were in charge there, because it was kind of an interesting dynamic, because on the kind of level of management, you had these like old elites, like often aristocratic or very large landowning background and very close ties to the princely states in Punjab. So especially among these groups, there until quite late remained quite a lot of loyalism towards the colonial state. But at the same time, of course, as an educational institution, you had these kind of new middle classes and groups, professors and scholars and stuff that were more inclined toward these kind of anti-imperial movements and nationalist movements. So the college had like to coincide with all these kind of currents. And to get back to physical education, you saw for instance that there was a big emphasis on the military training, which the college from early on kind of wanted to include at the institution. At some point, very early, there was even a talk about or starting it as an actual military school, but that never happened. So, yeah, kind of military drill and stuff like that took kind of an important role from early on in these physical education schemes at the institution.
So why don't you say a note about how you mentioned about the intrigue of who was in charge, but maybe flesh out a bit more about how this college came into being, who founded it, when, why, is it still running today? Like, tell us a bit about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but yeah, its origins went back to the 1880s when you had, of course, you know, these organizations like the Arya Samaj and the Anjumani Himayat Islam, which opened their colleges in Lahore, especially, which was the kind of educational center. And yeah, among the Sikhs, you also had these kind of social religious reform groups like the Singh Sabha movement and the Khalsa Divans, which are, of course, well researched. And yeah, they too kind of wanted to start their own communal institution. But those were in some, kind of unlike maybe the other institutions, these Singh Sabhas were quite tied also to these more princely states. So eventually, when the college was founded, it was founded with a lot of money from these princely states, but also with a lot of help from the British Indian government. So you might even say at first it was kind of a cooperation between these two or three groups, these social reformist groups, princely aristocratic groups, and the British Indian government. And this remained like that, like until the 1920s. In the late 19th and 1910s, the government actually got even more hold of the institution. But in 1920s, then kind of in the wake of the whole non-cooperation movement, and of course, also after the experience of the Jallianwala Bagh massacre, Ghadar movement, and stuff like that. The institution was nationalized, it was called, and the British Indian government completely withdrew from the institution and its constitution. But this still meant, or it didn't really meant that it got in the hand of these newer, more radical Sikh groups like the Akalis, which kind of started also in these early 1920s. But it actually remained in the hands of these old elites, which still remained quite interested in cooperating with the government. So especially then in the 1920s and 30s, you had these quite aggressive conflicts between Akali critics of the institution and its management, which kind of still tried to appease the government, which eventually in the 1930s resulted in a bomb attack, actually, which led to the death of one of its students. So it was kind of a contested arena at the college then in the late colonial years.
So what do you conclude in your study? Tell us particularly about this idea of localized modernity.
Educational modernity, of course, are the two main words or topics, as they are in the title of the book. And modernity, of course, is a kind of contested term. So what I understand is, or I understand it less as in the vein of this modernization theory. And that's not my intention to kind of look how these developments in Punjab or among the six might have fulfilled, I mean, any kind of claims for modernization or not. But I was more interested that modernity as a sense for the six or as a tool. And this maybe leads me to the education part, because I would say that, for quite long, scholarship with education kind of tends to talk either about education as kind of imperial imposition or education in terms of anti-imperialist resistance. But what I found very interesting at this institution was how education and these kind of idioms of modernity were used by the Sikhs to kind of evolve their very own interpretation of their own identity or of their place in India. Yeah, which, as I think I implied already, was kind of difficult because on one hand, you had this kind of cooperation with the government, which also was kind of contested, like all the time, by various groups. But on the other hand, the mainstream nationalist movement was for a lot of them not kind of an appealing option. So they had to kind of find their own way. And what I try to argue in this book is that this happened through kind of adhering to these idioms of modernity, like specific scientificity, a kind of universalist approach to knowledge, meaning that they were very happy to draw from what might have been considered Western science, because they didn't understand it as Western, but kind of alluding to Sikh tradition as kind of synthesis of earlier religious thought, then trying to claim a modernity that would kind of bring together East and West and the various Indian nationalities or communities. And for this kind of adherence to these typical type of discourses like imperial, national, but also global, helped in kind of producing this framework of Sikh modernity.
So what are you studying now at Tufts?
I moved on kind of from the Khalsa College, especially as, of course, very narrow subject. But I work at Tufts on a new project, which deals with Protestant internationalism and American missionaries, the Indian Christians in colonial South Asia, in the late colonial period, especially in the interwar movement. Actually, this project, it has some ties to what I was looking at before, because, as I said, you already had in the 1920s and 30s, even at this Sikh college, you could find some traces of this American influence in areas like agriculture and physical education, where you had often like kind of missionary based attempts or schemes that went more in a secular direction, dealing with matters like agriculture, social work, and education. So, while on the other hand, I have in chapter 3, I think, some passages which kind of show kind of an internationalist scene in religious exchange in the 1920s and 30s. Of course, in a wake of a general internationalism after the First World War and with the League of Nations and stuff like that. So in this new project, I kind of try to bring these topics together a little bit, like these new schemes and enterprises of American missions in the US, but also Protestant internationalism as a very global discussion or global scene. And then again, also the role of Indian Christians in these networks.
Great. Was there anything else about the book that you hope to be able to touch on today?
I mean, I hope readers will like it. And I hope that I would maybe like to emphasize, of course, it's a study on a particular institution, but I do think it kind of speaks to or might speak to a lot of interests. And so people shouldn't be afraid that it will only talk about the college
So tell us, let's flesh out or unpack, what are those interests that it may speak to? So who might be, who may benefit from or enjoy this book? What subfields or interests pertain?
Yeah. I mean, I do. It's a case study, of course, but I do it. It should be of interest for everybody who has an interest in education in colonial South Asia. And I already mentioned like the individual chapters, and in these chapters, I always try to kind of contextualize very broad to what happens at the college. So there is a lot of stuff that, for instance, might relate to a kind of a global religious history in early 20th century and processes of homogenization and the emergence of this kind of world religion discourse and stuff like that. Or in the chapter on agriculture, there's a lot about this global rural reconstruction discourse. So I think the individual topics talked about in the chapters, they are such a might be of interest to people. So, then still, I mean, I spent quite a lot of time at Khalsa College itself during my research, and I didn't mention it, but it's still existing and still running, and it still is kind of considered an institution of heritage with quite a lot of historical importance to the Sikhs. So I would also be happy if the book might find some interest among people interested in the particular institution. Although, I think sadly there aren't any actual alumni anymore from the period I was looking at. So, but yeah.
Great. Well, thank you for speaking with me today about your book.
Yeah, thank you.
So for those of you listening, we have been speaking with Dr. Michael Philip Brunner, who is a visiting researcher at Tufts University, on his new 2020 Palgrave Macmillan publication, Education and Modernity in Colonial Punjab, Khalsa College, the Sikh Tradition and the Webs of Knowledge, 1880 to 1947. Until next time, keep listening, keep reading, stay safe.